You are very welcome to Cawley's Call with me, Alan Cawley, powered by Benetti Menswear, a topical debate show covering all things Irish football, along with 1v1 interviews with top-class sports stars from a wide range of different sports.
It's me that's putting on the green jersey, me that's going to take flak from people to say, you're not even Irish. I was big enough to say, I'm going to take it.
There's many people I've spoke to, they always say, I used to put money on you scoring the first goal, but I've never seen any of that money, though.
And Andy, he says, I want the performances that I got from you in Scotland with you under 16s, not that rubbish that you gave me over in Ulster.
Hi everyone, and you're very welcome to Series 2, Episode 10 of Cawley's Call. Great to have you back again this week. And before we actually get into this week's show, I just wanted to say thanks again for all the feedback to last week's show. Jim Beglin, a brilliant chat that we had, plenty of messages and feedback, and keep the feedback coming because that's what helps us in terms of planning shows for the future as well. So we really appreciate that. And I'm absolutely delighted to say that we're joined by another friend, really, of ours, myself and Stewie, over the years, but we've not seen sight nor sound of him in a long, long time. But we're going to take a trip down memory lane, and I'm absolutely delighted to say that the Bohemians legend himself, Mr. Kevin Hunt, is with us. Kevin, how are you?
Hi, how's it going, Al? You all right?
Good, Kev.
Yeah, I've been under the radar a little bit, haven't I?
Kev, I'm not even sure what radar you're under because no one can get a hold of you.
Yeah, I know. We were speaking the other day, but I'm not really on social media or anything. So, as I say, I like to keep under the radar.
And is there any particular reason why you don't bother with social media, Kev? Or it's just you're a bit older now. You're not.
Yeah, I mean, like my generation. Yeah, I'm an old guy. My generation. Really, I wasn't really into it, you know. And it's just for me. Like, I hate taking photos and all that. I drive my missus mad. For me, it's just a bit strange, you know. You see people posting or whatever. Just pop down the shops, get a bag of potatoes. I've come home now, you know. And it's like, I'm thinking, why, you know, what's all that about? But no, it is great. I mean, like, I can see the benefits of it. Like, my kids are on it. They love it all. But yeah, I'm just a bit of an old git, really.
No, you're not missing much, to be honest with you, Kev, because we've had plenty of chats about social media on here, and it can be toxic at times, as everybody knows as well. So I would admire your stance. And as I say, you're not missing much at all, but I could imagine if social media was around when you were playing, you'd be all over social media, Kev.
Yeah, I think you would. Like, when you're playing, you just, I suppose it's the same for everyone who's like performing or doing any job they're in. People are watching them, could be like singers or whatever. Like, yeah, you just go and see what people are saying about you after, don't you? And I that's why I'm sort of glad it wasn't around at the time, because yeah, if you have a bad performance, geez, I bet there's some sort of
backlash
on there. So yeah, you drive yourself mad, I think.
Yeah, well, you didn't have to worry too much about those bad performances, as we know, Kev.
But well, I had a few, mate.
That was only when I played against you.
Oh yeah. Oh, did you used to play? Did you?
But before we get into all that, Kev, can you just tell us exactly what you've been up to, I suppose, in the last few years? Because we all know and remember you so fondly from the league and the Bohemians connection, and everybody remembers your time at Daly Mount and speaks so glowingly about you, and ourselves included, the lads that would have played against you. But as you say, you have gone under the radar the last few years, and it's great to speak to you again. But what have you been up to?
Oh, yeah, well, thanks for that. Yeah, obviously, I left in it was 2008, July, August time. And I think if I'd have stayed in Ireland, obviously I would have been in and around things more, and you know, I might have been doing media stuff or coaching or whatever. But because we moved back to England, it's all like I had to start again, you know, which is just always difficult, you know. I was 33 at the time. I wasn't involved in football in England. Obviously, I'd been away for quite a few years, so yeah, it wasn't easy. And I came back. Luckily, I knew somebody at Man City. He was the reserve team manager. I used to play with him in Hong Kong. And he said, this is when Man City was just about to be, well, it was just taken over at the time. So they were just putting everything in place, you know, becoming this sort of club that they are now. But at the time, they were just sort of starting their scouting department and everything. And my friend said to me, because I was living down south, he said, I need somebody down south as a scout. So, yeah, I just started on expenses there. Went part-time, went full-time. And then he ended up there 5 years, scouting. And I was doing, like, mainly the south of England, but then doing, like, tournaments in Europe and stuff. And then I got asked to go to Liverpool. So I was there for 3 years and I was sort of head of France there.
Okay.
So I was travelling back and forward for 3 years there. And then about 4.5 years ago, a good friend of mine who's an agent, he asked me to come do some sort of like consultancy work with him. So I do that with him, a few other agencies. So yeah.
So you're still involved. And just in terms of the scouting side of it, Kev, because obviously you would have went from playing into the scouting, and there's a lot of debate and discussion over here at the moment about player development, and in terms of the right pathway for young players. Should they go to England at 16, or should they stay and maybe play in the league if there was pathways and then go? But from your scouting experience, Kev, what kind of age bracket were you looking at, or what was your, I suppose, what exactly were the club telling you that they were looking for at the time?
Yeah, well, at Man City, it was academy. So say probably from 14 upwards. And then I would be doing sort of, everything sort of overlaps. That's the way it is in the clubs. And then I'd be watching like young players playing in first team as well. So it was like a broad thing. Mm. When I went to Liverpool, it was mainly first team. Like the remit in Liverpool was basically, look, there were scouts in all the main countries, like so one in Italy, Germany, Spain, France, Germany, and I was the one in France. So you basically just had to nail that region, know everything, you know all the agents, know all the players, make sure you know everyone, because France is like it's a big country as well, and it's always a lot of players coming from there, from League Two and all that. So basically the remit was just to be an expert in your region, you know. So So Man City was more the younger ones.
Okay.
15, 16 year olds.
But if you, Kev, were going back, say for Liverpool with the first team, if you were going back with a recommendation for a player, would that be going directly through to Klopp and his management team, or obviously what's the pathway, I suppose, or the process that goes through before, if you were recommending a player for him?
Yeah. So, when I first went there, Brendan Rodgers was the manager. Mm. So there was like a chief scout, head of recruitment, and like a technical director, and they were the three main guys. So everything went through them, and then they passed on to Brendan. So what would happen is, say Brendan would be like, or any manager now would be the same with Jurgen. He would be right, needs a centre half, a midfielder, like a box to box midfielder or something like that, and a right winger or something like that, and we would get passed on that info, and you just have to bring up the best sort of players in those positions in your region, you know? So, and then they would go onto a short list, and yeah. Now I think like Jurgen obviously has a big say on whether they come in or not, but it's basically like a filtering system. So the guys in the countries, they would pick the best players, that they thought, you know, given the information they've got regarding positions and stuff. And then the guys at the top, the head of recruitment, and they would like filter it down and then pass all the information on to the manager, who would like generally make the final decision. So
it's very interesting, isn't it? Was there, like, obviously there's no replacing the playing side of things, but in terms of, as you say, you were involved doing the scouting for 8 years, was it kind of a close second or third, or you enjoyed it?
Yeah, I loved it. We all love football, and that's why, we try and stay involved after, don't we? So I think playing is the best. Mm. You can't get near that, you know, having the ball at your feet and being able to go and kick a ball around with your mates every day and get paid for it is
a dream job, yeah.
In the world, you know. But I think, for me, I didn't really fancy managing and coaching. It was just good to go and, I went from playing football for a living, getting paid, and to watching it. So, it was great. It was, you know, really enjoyable. And I was lucky enough to be able to stay in the game, you know.
All right, well, that leads me to the most obvious question. So, Kev, that there is, I want to know who Bohemians or Roddy Collins' chief scout was in Hong Kong that managed to get you from over to Bohemians in December of 1998.
I don't know. Roddy's got contacts everywhere, you know.
Okay.
You know Roddy.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. No, the way I got to the Bows, actually, I came home in 1998. I'd actually in Hong Kong, and then I was in Singapore. I came home. Sadly, I had like an offer to go back to Japan, so I was thinking about that. It was like the second division, not in the J League. It was the one down. Mm. And then sadly, my mum died, and I ended up staying. Because like, I was wanted to be around by my family and everything. Mm. So I didn't want to be like the other side of the world, really, to be honest. And then so I spoke to an agent to try and get me a club in England. Obviously, I wasn't really well known because I've been out of the, you know, game there for a while. I was about 23 then. Mm. So I started training at Barnet, and John Steele, the manager, was close to Roddy. So they were saying, like, you know, would you go over there and train with us, but then go over there and play. Obviously got him a few quid from Bows then, and then yeah, ended up staying. So it was
Did you know much about the league before that, Kev? Or obviously, as you say, you were away in Asia or whatever, but would you have known much about the League of Ireland before your time with Sign Up Bows?
Not loads. I knew the big clubs, Bows, Rovers, Shelbourne, St Pat's, you know, I'd obviously heard of them, Cork. So, but I didn't know enough about it, to be honest. Mm. But yeah, my first game was Cork away.
Mm. Turner's Cross.
Turner's Cross. And I certainly knew about the league after that. I come home with a busted ear.
I can imagine.
Broken nose. God, I was like, geez, is this... I thought I signed up for football, not Gaelic football. But yeah, it was...
It was more Munster rugby than Cork City, was it?
It was... Patsy Frayne, I don't know if you remember.
Great player, yeah.
So that was my first game. We drew 0-0, which was a decent result at the time because we were bottom of the league. Mm. And I think Cork were going for the league and whatever. So, yeah, that was a write-off battle. I thought, oh, yeah, this is a bit tasty. So, and after that, yeah, I played a few games. I really enjoyed it.
And of course, as you say, Kev, Roddy was the manager, signed you. We all know Roddy as an eccentric character in the league here. What was your first impressions of him, and how did you find playing under him?
Eccentric character, yes, that's right. No, he's he is that larger than life character. And I know Roddy over the years, there's probably people, he's probably like Marmite, where some don't like him and some do. Roddy, to me, from the start, was absolutely fantastic, you know. He took me under his wing. He helped me out. He was... Roddy's the type, he's like... He'll let you know if you're not doing it or you're not doing the right stuff. But if you do it for him, you know, he'll walk to the end of the earth for you. So, luckily enough, I was in the latter category. So, yeah, we had a really good relationship. And, I think sometimes... What's lost because of Roddy's massive personality, and he'll say a few crazy things. What is lost? He put together a good team there, you know, considering we were part time when I first come over, and we had some really good players then as well, by the way. Derek Swan, Maurice O'Driscoll, Robbie Brunton, you know, sadly, I think
Robbie passed away. Yeah,
Shawnee Marr. So we had Toki O'Connor, Owen Mullen. We had a lot of good players then, but we had to go full time, and you know, the way he pieced together the team. Bringing in Crowe as well, and players like Steve Caffrey and Simon Webb from England, from his connections, Dave Morrison. I think that sort of goes under that goes under the radar as well as me, to be honest.
Yeah,
you know what he did to put that title-winning team together.
Well, that was it, Kev, because as you say, despite the fact that you made your debut in Turner's Cross and you were down the bottom, the following year you went on a really good run in the league and you lost out in a replay to Shells in the FAI Cup final. So you were beginning to make strides, and as you said, he was piecing the team together, the signing of the likes of Crowe, Webby, those boys. And I suppose in that year, 2000, 2001, when the brilliant European run and, of course, the drama, I suppose, of the league, the only way you could describe it really is how roller coaster that league was, and winning on the last day of the season. And I think did you play in the game where you were 4-1 down to Shamrock Rovers as well, and looked like Roddy might lose his job?
Yeah, the Century one.
Crazy.
Yeah, that was a crazy game, because, like you say, it was a roller coaster of the season. There was rumours that he was getting sacked at half time there, and I don't know if all that's true.
Was that seeping through amongst the players, Kev? Did you sense that or feel that?
Yeah, not at half time, but afterwards we heard about it, you know. And it was just one of those crazy games because we'd had like a good European run as well before that. Mm. So we were on a high from that. And then our league form was a little bit patchy up and down. Shells were going well. And then, we found ourselves 4-1 down at Century to Rovers, like obviously our biggest rivals. I think a lot of our fans left at half-time, and I don't blame them, to be honest, but, you know, the very rare that you come back from that sort of, that sort of deficit. So
what did he say to you at half-time, or was it just a case of just throw caution to the wind?
Well, yeah, he tore into us a little bit, but I remember the game. We didn't actually play that bad. We controlled a lot of it, and then every time Rovers broke, they seemed to score a goal. So, but anyway, Roddy tore a few strips off us, and he just said, "Right, go out, get the first goal, and we'll see what happens." Roddy always had this belief, you know, and he did instill that into the players. And we actually waited 15 minutes, I think, for the first goal, and then bang, they all just sort of flew in after that, and it was an amazing game, and especially against Rovers, you know,
absolutely sure the rivalry there, and it's still
6-4 from 4-1 down, especially against them. It's
brilliant,
made it more special.
And you obviously went on to win the league, as I say. The last day of the season, Kev, was huge for you. You won the FEI Cup, so I think it was the most successful year for Bohemians in a long, long time. It was their first league title since 1978 as well. So, as you say, to be fair to Roddy, he should be remembered for that.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, he pieced the team together well. We had good results in Europe, and we won the double. So he couldn't have done much more. I think politically, maybe, you know, Roddy will. I think Roddy said himself, and I've seen him in interviews, you know, in the boardroom, he wouldn't hold back. Like if he said we need this or need that, or thought he needed that, he would go in and say it, you know. He's probably not everybody's favourite in the boardroom area. So I don't 100% know what happened, but I just remember that, he was away on holiday, and we were in the break, and we heard that he'd gone. So it was a bit of a strange one, but I still don't think, you know, should get away from the fact that what a great job he did.
Yeah, absolutely. And you would have had a good relationship with him, as you say, and he was good to you. So that's always good to hear, Kev. But of course, Stephen Kenny came in then, and I suppose that was probably the best period, really, was it, when Stephen Kenny came in, that you had a brilliant team at the time. It would have been when me and Stewie would have played against you regular. And that league-winning season, 2002-2003, was that the best Bohemians team that you played with during your time there, Kev?
I think so, yeah. I think so. We had some real talented players then. Played some great football. I think the only thing I do look back with a bit of regret that we should have won probably at least one more league title. The only thing was, like, you had Shells at the time. And
Stewie is smiling here as you say that, Kev.
Yeah, I was laughing.
He's like a Cheshire cat here. He is thinking, yeah, because we won all the leagues that day.
Yeah,
go on, Stu, tell him.
Okay, I think you got that wrong, actually.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, you guys were just so strong, and I think probably the edge, and this is, you know, looking back, I think we had to play our best maybe to win. Do you know what I mean? But I thought Shells, you guys are just sort of, you churn out results all the time, you know, and it was quite relentless. I think when we got it right, I thought we were really, really good. And I think sometimes, it was difficult. I think we should have won. You should have given us one more at least, Joe. Do you know
what I'm thinking of, Kev? Actually, funny you should say that. Do you know what I'm thinking of? I'm thinking of the night in 2003. I presume this is the league you're talking about, is it? You guys probably felt you should have won that league. That was the night we beat his 1-0 up in Dalymount.
You got a good memory, didn't you? I remember all these.
You scored.
I scored.
Yeah, why do you think he's bringing that up, Kev?
Strange about that.
No, there's a reason I remember this night very well, and I don't know how you might reflect on it. You were top of the table going into that game. And I remember we turned up, right? And there was a bit of a buzz about the place. Like, you know, there was loads of sponsors going on. There was new cars getting sponsored. And it got up our nose. It really did.
They were smelling
these think they've won this. They think they've won it. Like, you know, and that's completely from my point of view, Kev. I don't know what it was like from your point of view. And we said, not having this. So that now in saying that, you look back at that game, both battered us.
Okay.
They battered us.
Did I? Yeah.
You did. Yeah.
Did we?
Yeah, you did. So, and to be fair,
the fans won't be happy with that one, Kev.
We scored early, Kev. We scored early, way too early, and we just ground out we just held on to the lead, grounded out, got the win. To be fair, you didn't turn up then. It just seemed to knock us for six completely. And now we went down and won the rest.
I think you guys were like a machine, you know. And like I said, that tied in with my point. Like, you didn't have to really play well to win a game. You know, you had like great characters like yourself and Owen and all these boys. And yeah, it was tough going. How many did you win in the end?
Four.
Yeah.
See, he's rubbing it in now, Kev.
We could have had three each.
Kev, obviously Stephen Kenny was the manager at that time, and he would have had a big influence on how good that team was, I suppose. And to be fair, we often have the discussion now about the standard of the league, and you don't want to be ones that are looking back on maybe when we played, and people say, oh, you're only saying that because it was the time when you played. But there was really brilliant competitive full-time teams back then, and the league was very, very competitive. I don't think that's the case now, to be quite honest with you, and I actually know it's not the case right now. But just in terms of Stephen Kenny and all that he's gone on to achieve since, could you see that in him from your days under him, Kev, or has it surprised you the success that he's gone on to have?
No, I could see it. Like, look, he came in, I think we were... The year after we won the double, we started off really bad. And Pete Marm was in charge, top fellow, top guy. We started off the season bad, and then Stephen come in. So he sort of steadied the ship and got us playing again. And then obviously the season after, we won the league. So, you could see by the way he wanted the team to play, it was always with the ball. You know, he wanted to play a possession game. He liked his wingers, exciting players, technical players. So, it doesn't surprise me at all. I think the season after that, it just went a little bit pear-shaped, to be honest. But, that happens sometimes, doesn't it? It doesn't mean you're not a good manager. But he come back and, he won loads of leagues, didn't he, with Dundalk and everything. So, no, it doesn't surprise me. He's got... real good football brain. You know him well, Stu, as well, from your time.
Yeah, I know. I agree with what you say there. I mean, he was very, certainly wanted to play a certain way. I was going to actually ask you, Kev, what was the longest he went silent on a telephone call with you? I think I might have the world record record for 2 minutes.
Probably about that. I've had to check his phone was still working. he'd have his... funny little quirks, but
there is some funny quirks. I've heard some stories over the years.
It's not funny, it's a mental abuse. That's what it is. He's mentally abused.
Well, you said it, not me.
You can see Stewie still gets on great with him, can't you, Kev?
It's like you'd go from, I'm not doing that, you'd still be quiet 20 seconds later, I'm not doing it, Stephen. And it'd be 30 seconds later, listen, okay, if you talk to me, I'll do it.
Kev, one thing that struck me over the years as well. Without blowing smoke up your backside, but you were such a really nice fella to play against on the pitch as well, even though we would have kicked lumps out of each other. But the relationship you struck up with the fans, did that kind of surprise you? Because you probably never would have envisaged when you were coming over initially from England, signing with Bose, thinking, I don't know how this is going to pan out. But as you say, you're there 10 years, the fans absolutely adored you, and they still do. And even... I spoke to a lad today who played. My best friend was Conor O'Grady, chatting to him, saying, Kevin's coming on. And the first thing he says to me, tell him I was asking for him. So you're remembered fondly fellow players as well, which I think is lovely, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to the first question, you never know when you're signed for a club, and I didn't know how long I'd be there, you know. I signed to the end of the season when I first came, and yeah, he signed like a 2-year, 3-year contract. So you don't know how long he's going to be somewhere. But yeah, I did build up a good relationship with the fans. And, you know, Bowes is a big club in Ireland. And, you know, Bowes, Shells, Rovers, Pats, they're the, you know, they were the big ones back then. And I felt I was lucky to be there. And I was, you know, I was fortunate enough to have a really good relationship with the fans. And I know, like, I was from England, wasn't I? So, you know, we can't escape that. So I think considering that as well, then, yeah, it was even more special. But, I've only good things to say about the fans. And,
right, I'm gonna give you a big head now. Right, you ready? So there's two reasons why they loved you. First of all, you were a super footballer. Okay, Bowes up until then wouldn't have had the kind of midfielder with the kind of grace you had. Like, you know, get on the ball, try and control the game. Like, you know, and I think that was a breath of fresh air to them. Right, that was the first reason. The second reason is you were loyal. You were extremely loyal to Bowes. Am I right? Because I thought there was one occasion where you were possibly even going to come to Shells, and I got quite excited about the two of us, but it didn't happen because you were loyal to Bowes, and I think they recognised that in you.
Was there conversations, Kev, to maybe go to Shells?
Yeah. When I was 28, then 29, I was out of contract, and there was a lot of change, and obviously Crowe and Hawks.
They followed the money.
Bobby Ryan. They went Gary O'Neill.
They followed the money, Conti. They followed the money.
No, I don't think it was that.
I'm joking.
I know. Yeah, I think at the time, I think Shell's going for it. They thought, right, if we can merge, say, like some of the players from Bowes into ours, and I think me and Stewie would have played really well together, mate. To be fair, but you bombing forward and scoring.
You would have complimented each other.
We would have. There was two opportunities where we could have ended up with each other, and one was Bowes when Stephen went there, and then the second one was when I thought Kevin was coming to Shells.
Yeah, and I spoke to Pat, and Pat's top fella, and I wish, you know, obviously he came to manage us when I only had about one leg, so it's a shame that I couldn't play under him before, because I thought like his sessions were excellent. He was a great man. It's a shame, like, he didn't come to Bowes sooner. But I think at the time it was a little bit difficult, because Shells came in, they offered me a contract, Drogheda offered a contract, and I spoke to Pat, but in the end decided to stay, because
in some ways, Kev, and I know obviously the fact that you were so good, and to be fair there was money around the league at the time, and there was players going, there was, as I say, it was competitive, there was 5 or 6 full-time teams, which was great, but in some ways now looking back, and the fact that, as I say, what I just mentioned a few minutes ago and chatting to you, and Stewie mentioned how loyal you were, I'm kind of glad you never went to anyone else, because you'll always be remembered as that Bowes legend, and that might have tarnished that a little bit.
It would have done. I mean, I think if I'd have gone, then I wouldn't have had the. And that was the thing. You know, when you're captain of the club, and I'd been there, I think probably about six seasons then. So I was well tied in with the club. So, and I knew it probably weren't going to be as competitive, because Shell's nicked all our top players. So I knew that it might have been a little bit difficult. But no, I was glad I stayed. I was glad I stayed, to be honest. I was offered good contract by Bowes, and do you know what I mean? So it wasn't like I was trying to be a martyr or anything, because I was on a really good contract. So, it was just, I did want to stay. So.
Okay, yeah, so Kev, it's been an absolute pleasure. As I said, we started off by saying you're very much under the radar now, but I'm glad we got hold of you and got you to come on the show. As I said, you were an absolute gentleman to play against, but a brilliant footballer as well. So it's great talking to you again. And
you better not be as good looking as you used to be either.
I'm better.
He said to me last week, I only have a face for the radio. He can piss off now. You're far from a gentleman.
No.
Okay, it's been brilliant, Kev.
It's great. And it's been good to talk to you guys. And let's see. I might come over soon.
Do get in touch anytime you're over. Get in touch. Yeah. You'd be well looked after. Yeah, no problem.
We'll have a point.
All right. Thanks, Kev.
Cheers, guys. See you later. Bye-bye. Bye.
So he asked you, Kevin Hunt, brilliant player.
He was a super footballer. He really was, I have to say.
He was a great player, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. I tell you what, he was always the one that, like, I'd have to, you know, I mean, I'd have to raise my game to play against, because he was...
Because he would have been going toe-to-toe in the heart of the midfielder.
I would have, yeah. And he wasn't your typical League of Ireland player. So, you know, as much as the late 90s, early noughties was a transition period, you know, in professionalism in Ireland, everything was changing. Like, you know, I came into the game under the old regime. Mm. So I learnt my trade under the old regime. Like, I was very young, which is probably a good thing for me, toughened me up. Like, you know, the game was kick lumps out of each other on shit pitches, and, you know, the hungriest survived sort of thing, like, you know. But it evolved very, very quickly, especially when the likes of Stephen Kenny, Pat Fenlon, the younger managers came in, had come through the coaching system, and they wanted to play more football, like, you know, and it transitioned. So you had to kind of move with the times, and you went from playing against, you know,
old school hard nuts
who you could read, and you were younger and you were quicker and you could always get in there. And the likes of Kevin came along then, and it was different. And, like, you know, a top professional came in from England,
raising the standards.
Good looking lad, blonde hair. You were kind of like, oh,
he was a good looking fucker, wasn't he?
I thought I'm in trouble here. and to be fair, now backed it up.
And the cheek of him said to me, "I have a face for radio." The fucking cheek of him.
Now, Kevin Hunt is a nice guy, but he could leave one in as well.
Oh no, he knew how to
leave one in as well, which I like yeah, even more about my.
No, but I know people, the listeners are probably thinking, "Oh, like, how can you be a gentleman on it?" Whatever, but what the point we're making is he would leave one on you, or you get stuck in.
Oh, yeah.
But it was always a shake hands after, and that was it. There was no kind of verbals with him. He wasn't one of them fellas that'd be non-stop.
And that's why I didn't mind, like, you know. Funnily, I
was a mouthy bollocks on the pitch.
You were a mouthy bollocks, and you wouldn't tackle either, like, you know. So I don't know why you were giving him. But so you had to adapt your game to play against Kevin. You had to be on your game, you know, because he was such a good footballer, like, you know, and, you know, quite graceful, moved really well. Ball retention was always very good, so sometimes it was kind of a case where you sometimes had to just let him have the ball, because he'd make a mug of you. So, I the ultimate respect for the guy. We actually our kids kind of were born at the same time. I bumped into him in the Rotunda Hospital a couple of occasions, like, you know. So
to tackle him,
I remember going into it's funny how times change when you've got kids. The first time I had kids, I went semi-private Rotunda, you know, I've gone into the clinic of a tourist or whatever, and there he is there. And that's my first thing to think, what the fuck are you doing here? You know? But we sit down, we have a chat, and when you're in a different environment, you get to know somebody, and we bumped into each other a couple of times, like, you know, and I saw the different side of him, if you know what I mean. I think Irish people can get a little bit defensive when, you know, these good looking Cockney lads come along, and it's like, I'm going to show you.
I'm comfortable in my own skin for that. I'm fine with that. I don't know about
when you sat down and got to know him, he was a super fella. He really was. And that was the first child. Second child came along, same thing, semi-private, towards public, towards fourth public, just get in and get out and go home. I'll deliver it myself.
That's Kevin Hunt, and I'm delighted we spoke to him, and there's lots more to come, I suppose, in the way of older players and different things like that as well. But we need to look back on the game, Stu, a mad busy weekend. So rather than look back on all the games Friday night, all the action really was yesterday as well. So I'm going to give you the results first of all for Friday night before we actually get into the nitty gritty of the games. So Drogheda picked up a good point on Friday, 1-1 with Sligo Rovers. If anything, Drogheda probably should have beat them with the second half performance. St. Pat's won comfortable 3-0 against Longford. Forrester with an absolute, we all saw the goals, Stu. Our favourite player, Chris Forrester, unbelievable goal. Bowes, I was in Daly Mount. Again, we're going to get into a little bit of a chat about Bowes, because they're not far off being good. Yet they've 5 defeats out of the 8 games. And you look at them again, obviously slipping up yesterday, and it's very disappointing. So They got beat by Derry 2-1. It was brilliant for Rory Higgins, but it was a late winner they got. But Bowes actually played quite well in the match. Finn Harps 0, Shamrock Rovers 2, a comfortable win for Shamrock Rovers away on Friday. And Waterford lost 3-0 at home to Dundalk. And again, we're going to get into a couple of bits about Waterford, because there's a bit of stuff going on off the pitch which I'm not too happy with myself. But the games yesterday, Shamrock Rovers, they beat Waterford 3-0. They beat them quite comfortably. I looked at the game, they were very comfortable the whole way. Waterford again, the same 11 that played in the game on Friday night. They were out on their feet. Two and three subs on the bench, Stu. There's trouble going on with the goalkeeper. Kevin Sheedy saying it's some sort of a protest that he's not playing the younger lads or academy players, putting them on the bench because he's trying to protect them from the standard refereeing, which is the greatest load of nonsense I've ever heard, Stu, from a manager in a long, long time. Because the young fella should be on the bench.
Yeah, I think I think there's a little bit of inexperience being shown here. Things are not good at Waterford at all, and especially when you've got, like I say, I agree. Murphy being one of the
and we know Brian Murphy. It would take an awful lot to fall out with Brian Murphy. He's not that type of lad at all.
Not in his nature, like, you know. And it's definitely there seems to me to be a clash of personalities there. I don't know whether it's with Kevin or whether it's with Mike Newell. I don't know. But it isn't doing the football club any good.
And naming two, the credibility of the league and all, so naming two players on the bench, it looks desperate, I think.
Yeah, completely. I mean, people just need to grow up, to be quite honest with you. Like, you know, and you know, you have difficulties in football. It happens all the time, you know, and you get clashes of personalities and whatever the case. But you gotta bury your egos here, and you gotta, you know, do what's best for the team. Look,
and he's a brilliant goalkeeper.
Move him on in the summer. But play him,
like, you brilliant
know,
goalkeeper.
It's naivety. It's from the management team. It really is. It's there's some sort of, I don't know. It just looks awful. It really does. There's no winners here. No. Only Waterford.
Well, they've lost seven games out of the nine pathetic. Now. But we have to mention Shamrock Rovers because they broke a record yesterday. Stu, 31 games unbeaten. It was a record that has stood since January 1926 to November 1927, which was 30 games, league games unbeaten. And it was actually a record that they held themselves. So they're after breaking their own record. It's 31 league games. It's a phenomenal achievement, really.
It is. It has to be recognised. No, it genuinely does have to be recognised. You know, regardless of how they've gone about doing it, they've gone about and, you know, beating a record that's been around for a long period of time. The Dundalk team, I think, might have went close. Would have went close a few years back. But for Shamrock Rovers,
September 2019 up to yesterday.
Yeah, look, I suppose it's worth mentioning here. This is justification for the football club for doing a lot of things right. Okay, and they've done a lot of things right. You know, in recent years, and I'm thinking back to, I mean, you know, it nearly 20 years ago where the club went into administration and we're in real trouble of going, you know. Even some people might even say Milltown, you know, the club has been homeless since Milltown. But in the last 10, 15 years, they've done things right. They've gotten debt free. They've gotten the ground sorted out. That could have went anyway. But it didn't. They got the ground sorted out, training ground sorted out.
Academy.
They put their faith in youth. They've stuck by Stephen Bradley, you know, where other clubs might have moved them on, and they're doing their business the right way, and of course they've also benefited from some investment in the club. But because of all these factors, you know, why wouldn't you invest in Shamrock Rovers, like, you know? So look, that's justification for them. Let's hope that all the other clubs are looking at Rovers as the model or some form that will suit them, because they're getting it right. They're getting everything right. Because they now are a football club that own their own training ground. They have their own ground. Good investment in the club. I know they're spending a lot of money, and that has to be watched when you look at the context.
But I think they're very prudent in that
regard. They're prudent. They're doing it right. And they're getting it right.
I would agree with every word, because to be fair to Shamrock Rovers, and I would have had my differences with Stephen Bradley, which is fine, and stuff in the early days in terms of the goalkeeping situation and different things, but they did stick with him, Stu, when probably many were calling for his head, and they're getting the rewards for it now, and they've a very good team, and I'm the first person to say that last year when they won the league. They were an outstanding team again this year. I don't think they're quite as good this year, but that's obvious when you're losing Jack Byrne and Aramak, and if, but I still think they're very good, and they're still the team to beat this year in the league.
They can only get better, Alan, and that's the worry for everybody.
Well, you're looking at, to be fair, the player, I suppose, that was brought in to try and fill that void. And I did say at the start of the season, potentially he has all the potential to fill that void, and he's shown signs of it already. Mandrio, he scored again yesterday. He's a star, that kid, Stu.
He is. No, there's no doubt about it. He's a hell of a talent, wonderful footballer. But as I say about talent, talent is only, talent is 90% hard work, and when the penny drops for him, which it will,
dropping.
It's dropping.
Yeah.
because you can see it
in the environment now.
He's been asked to do something that doesn't come naturally to him, and that's perfectly fine. But as long as he's listening to what his manager and his coaches are telling him to do, he'll fulfill his potential.
And let them keep putting the demands on him, because that's what he needs.
Yeah, let's hope he does, yeah.
And Noyes did score, but they were very good again, as I say, the 1-3-0 comfortably yesterday. Huge game now to have next week against St. Pat's. Obviously, St. Pat's have had a brilliant start themselves. They were involved in a big game yesterday down in Sligo, 1-1 draw. A 96th minute equaliser. I had my head in my hands, but Ian Birmingham popped up with a brilliant header. And to be fair to Burmo, it was a great header. He's playing very well this year. I love the celebration, actually, because we spoke to Chris, obviously, about the mentality maybe that's slightly changing with Pats. They fought right till the end yesterday, Shu, and they deserved the equaliser. And in the celebrations, it's one of them celebrations that's quite telling. I know it's a late.
Oh, I agree.
But they're all there, over to the manager. They're all jumping. They're all I loved all that. So it just sends out that little signal that they believe they're in it for the long haul, hopefully. And we need someone to be in it, because Shamrock Rovers now are on 23 points. They're closest to them on 21. So that's a huge game next week in Inchcore.
I completely agree with everything you say there. I mean, and the goal as well. There was a real quality in how they went about getting the corner. You know, they maintained possession. They didn't panic. 94th minute, still keeping the ball. Working it, ended up getting the corner. Funnily enough, they never marked Barrow for the corner, watched the goal again. And in the end, I think it was Gibson.
Free header.
He was the last Sligo player to come back, and he looked a little bit, didn't know where to go, didn't know who am I marking here. It ended up being Barrow, but Barrow stole a little yard on him and got the goal. But you get what you deserve in football. They kept going to the end.
Well, Sligo could have been, before that, they could have been up, I think, 2 or 3 goals, to be fair to them. But Pats then took over towards the end. It looked like the goal was coming, but it is a sickener when you concede in the 96th minute. To be fair to Sligo Rovers, and as I said, we spoke a lot about them. I was critical of a lot of stuff last year. They've had a really good start this year, Stu. So I'd be, and it would have been a huge win yesterday coming off the back of,
Think of the psychological lift and the down for both teams. Like, you know, obviously for Pats it feels like, you know, it justifies it for them, feels like a win, but for Sligo a couple of results have gone a little bit rare.
The one in draw the last week and then Derry, so that's 3 games now where it's just been a bit. You look, Pats are a very good side, but certainly coming off the ones last week, but no, overall I think the Sligo Rovers fans should be quite happy where they're sitting. And I still, regardless of the hype at the start, I've said this after the few games, I said Sligo were never going to win a league this year. They're not even close to winning the league this year. They need to be just qualifying for Europe and building on that again for next year, and then maybe challenge. That should be the route they're going down, and hopefully it is, and the fans should be quite happy with where they're at the moment. The Longford Dundalk 2-2. Longford went 2-0 up, Stu. Dundalk again, I don't know what's going on.
Well,
it's a mess.
Look, I mean, you know, I actually watched this game, or most of it.
I watched a good chunk of the second half of this.
You cannot justify for the 2 goals. From Dundalk's point of view, the goals you can see, the goalkeepers made a hames both of them.
Peter,
simple
Terry,
as that.
Horrendous.
One you can live with, but if you just look at the reaction from the Dundalk players, it tells you everything, because it's very much a, oh jeez, here we go again. Like, you know, what can we do? So they've got a huge crisis now. Shamrock Rovers, not too long ago, had an awful crisis with goalkeepers, and you've seen the effect it has on not just the back four, but the whole team. It goes through like a virus, and it's very, very hard to shake. And Dundalk are now in a situation where if they concede, it's like, oh no, here we go again. The heads drop, and it's very, you know, and when you consider a team of that quality.
It's a great way of describing it, Shua, and I never ever put it like that, but it's like a virus. It is. It's pretty, because it seeps through the team, and we saw that with Shamrock Rovers when they were having their issues.
It's called COVID-21.
You're looking at it yesterday, and look, I know Peter Cherry really well. Peter Cherry wasn't brought into Dundalk to be their number one. They signed a lad, a BB, right, and now they realise they don't think he's up for it and the mistakes he made. Peter's thrown in. Obviously, he has a howler yesterday, Peter. I know him really well, but he was only brought in as backup. But that goes back to the recruitment at the start of the season again, to get a proper goalkeeper when Gary Rogers left.
Alan, they should have got a proper goalkeeper 3 years ago.
When Gary
played till he was nearly 40. Yeah. Well, that's just crazy. And that's no disrespect to Gary. Gary's probably looking around going, here, I can't keep doing this, lads. And like, you know, I mean, I need to be rested here as well. Like,
so there was no one putting pressure on him, right?
Should have been done to, you know. From what I knew, Stephen Kenny tried to bring in a goalkeeper just before he finished up. Didn't happen. I think it might have been actually Murphy at the time. So even he was looking at it
because
back then.
Because exactly, Stu, like, that would have been the perfect way to prime someone along. Gary's coming near the end. You have someone ready to go as soon as of a similar calibre of a number one goalkeeper that you're bringing in, saying, oh, look, Gary's coming near the end. As soon as he's finished, bang, this fella being. Look at the uncertainty that's around the goalkeeping situation now, feeding into all the other problems that they have. And they have a lot of problems. And I think another major problem that they have, and they won two games before this, but the uncertainty around not having a manager. Jim McGilton is on the line, right? The problem I think the uncertainty brings is there's no one accountable then. So Jim McGilton should be the person, the manager is supposed to be accountable if he's in his proper role. But Jim is taken out of his director of football role and he's down in the dugout. Then they get another bad result yesterday. Who's accountable to who? The players don't know who the manager is, so they don't feel accountable to anyone. The manager doesn't feel, because the manager should be accountable to the director of football, but he's down in the dugout.
So they have a huge problem, Dundalk. I mean, a very obvious one. They need a manager and a long-term manager, but it ain't as easy as that. It's not as easy as going out and getting the likes of a top manager from England who might have worked. You could bring Sam Allardyce over if you wanted, or you could bring over, Pep Guardiola for all you care. Like, but what the problem I think they have is that Stephen Kenny, right, and to a lesser extent Vinny, because he learned this from Stephen. Stephen was fantastic at galvanizing the town with the team, and they both worked together. So you had players who were happy in Dundalk, probably felt like superstars. The town treated them like superstars. Very small place, Dundalk, everyone knows everybody. So Stephen has always done this really well, to give him credit, and he learned his trade.
He did it at Longford as well.
He did it at Longford and he did it at Derry, and this is what he's excellent at doing. And he would always remind the players about the supporters, the town, the economy, or
what you're playing for,
the goodwill factor that the team brings to the town. And he would also again always talk to the supporters about it. And he was always that glue between both. Now they've lost them. They lack a figure, a person who can do that now, and they need somebody like that, because the dynamic is always different. The likes of a manager going into the likes of a Dundalk, different roles are going into the likes of a Shamrock Rovers. It's a different thing. It's a different dynamic. So this is the key for them, and it's going to be a great point,
because the fans, the disillusionment that's going on at the moment.
Oh, they're furious. They're absolutely furious.
Yeah, the way it's been managed so badly, and it's such a shame. We keep saying, I know you have to call it out for what it is, but at the same time, it's such a shame, because we've loved the Dundalk story and where it's been and what it's become now, and they're in rag order, Stu. Like, they really are.
Yeah, it feels that way. And the thing that really kills me is that I don't want this club to fade into the doldrums again, because Dundalk have proved over and over again they are a great football club. They've done it. They've done it in the 80s and in the 90s to an extent. Come back hugely strong now with the team that we've currently have. But it would break my heart to see it all fade away. Mm-hmm. And then you look at Oriel Park and you look around and you go, this club should have a top ground, ground. It shouldn't be like this. No, something's gone wrong somewhere.
Yeah, it is sad to see. But obviously the TV cameras are in Oriel Friday night. Sligo Rovers are in town. It's a huge game, Sligo and Dundalk. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But to me, Dundalk have a lot of issues that they need sorting out, and quickly. Derry, Rory Higgins got off to a brilliant start. As I say, I was in Dalymount on Friday night and they got a late winner. That was two back-to-back wins. Absolutely huge. He was jumping around the place. And you're thinking, going into the game last night, a local derby against Finn Harps, you would fancy them. But to be fair to Ollie Horgan and Finn Harps, they pulled one out of the bag. That lad Foley again popped up with a goal right at the end, and a brilliant result for Finn Harps. It just keeps them hovering in around our top half that nobody expects them to be in, including their manager, and he keeps telling us. But it was a huge result for them.
You'd argue they deserved it as well. They're probably the better side.
Second half,
and you have to point out, that's the first time Finn Harps have won the brand. I couldn't believe that stat. That's incredible. So well done to them. Huge quality about the goal as well. Caught Derry a little bit on the break. I think Derry were having to put them under a bit of pressure the last few minutes, and a lot of quality about the goal. They caught them on the break, worked really well. McNamee, lovely at the ball, through to Foley, and a hell of a finish. And I think he was having a little few words with the Derry supporters up on the wall. There was, I don't know if I'd have done that now, in fairness.
Bit of shithousery, is that what they call it, I think, nowadays?
I don't know if I'd have done that now to those boys.
Shithousery, yeah. And then the one I wanted to speak about really, Stu, because I suppose we started the show with Kevin, Bo's legend, as we know, and Bo's are going through a really tough time at the moment. Yet I watched him now, in the last 2 weeks I've watched him, against Shamrock Rovers, they were brilliant. One of the best performances I've seen. They were absolutely brilliant, yet they didn't get the result. I watched them on Friday night against Derry. Played really, really well. Lovely passages of play. Good football at times. Lost the game, Stu. Lost the game through an error. They're just giving away mistakes at the moment. The goal at the end, they conceded, was so soft. I think Dan Casey has been a loss because Finnerty didn't play. And you look at it, the centre-halves that played on Friday night, Cornwall and Big Kieran Kelly, and they let the lad McJanet in twice from a set piece from a corner and then a free kick right at the death. And nobody went with him and he could have taken the ball down the 6-yard box and tapped it in. So I know the Bo's fans are really frustrated at the moment, and I could sense that even from the few people that were there the other night, because they've obviously had such a brilliant time of it the last couple of seasons and they were probably expecting something similar this year. It's not happening. But I don't think they're far away, Stu.
No, I agree. I don't think they're far away. I can understand from the fans' point of view. Now, last year was such a good year for them, and they were there right from the start. And you know, it obviously gives huge hope to the supporters. They're watching this, and they're getting excited about it. And even though deep down they know, well, look, maybe we won't win a league title, but we might get to a cup final. And you know, you can see that. But to have that deflation so early in the season, supporters probably looking at it now, going, "Oh, geez, we're not going to contend."
Five games they've lost.
Yeah,
it's a lot.
It is a lot. And then there's definitely a naivety there in terms of defending. And I don't think their passing game, and they just weren't at it for a few games. Like, you know, and I'll go back to this again. I looked at me like they, I keep saying this, I don't know why, it felt they had maybe took the pedal off a little bit in pre-season, didn't want them to be too sharp, too fit, too quick, in the hope they'd have a longer, you know, you can get longevity in the players.
Yeah, but I don't think
that kind of feeling I got about them.
They're not a good enough team to be doing that, to think you get by in games. They have to be at it every game.
Completely. But the goal, when you look at the quality of the goal against Drogheda, that team goal.
Brilliant.
Definitely coming now. You can see it. They're playing in really difficult situations, playing themselves.
Some brilliant passes.
One, two, was out of difficult scenarios. Worked the goal really well. So you can see something is coming for them, all right. And do you know what? I mean, I don't think they weren't expected to go challenge Rovers anyway. They weren't good enough to do that. They're still well capable of getting Europe through the league.
Well, the league, when you look at the results, the results are mad.
Because it looks to me like Pats and Rovers are going to be the only two.
It is.
There's going to be points up for grabs, so I wouldn't be pressing the panic button. And there's a cup there for them as well.
A big positive as well, a player who I'm mad about is Dawson Devoy. And last year he broke on the scene. He was outstanding. I thought this was the year he might really kick on. Looking at him Friday night, he obviously hasn't had a great start to the year, but he came on against Derry, Stu. He was brilliant. Best player on the pitch. Sticks out like a sore thumb.
He's been injured, hasn't he?
He didn't get off to a great start. But I was sitting with Jim Crawford, our old friend, and Jim was telling me about him even when he goes in with the 21s, and Jim thinks he's an outstanding talent. We can all see that. Like, you know, he is. I think there's a lot of hope for Bowes there with him if he gets a run under his games. Ross Tierney's been brilliant in the last few weeks as well, in the games that he's played. I thought Ali Coop played quite well on Friday night also. Andy Lyons was very good. So I don't think they're far off.
To me, Alan, they look to me like they were being a little bit direct for a few games. Don't know whether it's with Georgie Kelly coming into the team, maybe they were trying out to play with a kind of a target man sort of mentality. Looks like they've been that a little bit.
Yeah,
and they said,
gone
you know
back,
what?
Yeah.
Let's just go and play football.
And they're better doing that.
I think so, yeah.
Okay, so I wouldn't lose all hope of Bo's just yet. We're just going to quickly look back on the first division results, a mad night in the first division as well, Stu, and the late drama in Tolka Park. But Bray 0, Cork City 0, Wexford 0, UCD 6, Shelburne 2, 3-2. Tommy Barrett's doing some job. We're going to get Tommy Barrett on the show sometime because I'm a big fan of Tommy Barrett and he's doing a brilliant job with Treaty. Athlone 1, Cabin Teely 2, Cove Ramblers 0, Galway 4, the Women's National League, Shelburne 2, DLR 1, Wexford Utes 5, Galway 0, Athlone 2, Cork City 2, and Treaty 0, Peamount 3. Stu, there's some bad news as well, and I don't really want to end on a negative, but it's worth mentioning, and we have to obviously mention it, but just in terms of offering our condolences to the Keeley family and the desperate news, we would have known Alan really well. I would have played with him, you would have played with him, against him, and it was so sad, the news of his passing yesterday, Stu. Really, really sad.
It was awful, Alan. It really was. funnily enough, I kind of knew Alan a little bit outside of football as well. Like, I've been, you know, Dermot's a home farm man, and I'm home farm as well. And I always remember Dermot through the schoolboy setup, and I always remember the kids, Dermot's kids, like, you know, and got to know Alan then as he became an adult, a young man. When I heard the news yesterday, I don't know, I had this strange thought of Alan as this young 20-year-old.
Mm.
That was my
memory.
That's how I remembered him. Yeah, yeah, Dermot's young lad, like, you know. And it was absolutely devastating. My thoughts really are with the family, with his family, with his kids. And we're good at this in the football community, at coming together to help out. And, you know, Dermot as well, who I think will be, well, he's obviously going to be devastated about the whole thing. Just to kind of say to everybody, if you see them, look after them, watch out for each other, you know, because they're going to need every bit of love you can give them. So, and, you know, all I can say is that he'll be sorely missed.
And more sad news broke just as we were recording, Stu, and a player who we'll all remember fondly, but Alan McLaughlin, Irish international.
Oh, geez,
the famous goal up in Windsor Park, obviously, that got us qualified as well. So it's desperately, desperately sad, both of them. And again, we offer our condolences to the family, the McLaughlin family and everyone. But just, life is precious, people. Life is precious. We don't really end the show too much on a downer, but we really appreciate all the calls and messages and all the usual that you give us and the feedback. Hope you enjoyed the Kevin Hunt one. Big thanks to Benetti Menswear, as always, who look after us and sponsor us. Paul Morris does an unbelievable work for us as well, and we're grateful to Paul. And Stewie, as always, thank you. And yeah, life is precious, people. Look after yourselves.
Thank you for listening to Cawley's Call, powered by Benetti Menswear. For more interviews like this, please subscribe to my podcast or follow on all my social media channels.